Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate. We have a spectacular show this week. The main event is magician, comedian, podcaster, and handheld mic enthusiast, Michael Kent. We hop back in time a bit to talk about where his handheld mic lecture has gone, but then we explore his podcast before diving into something he's an expert in, social media. Nick LaCapo stops by the show to discuss the featured product of the week from Kyle Purnell. Before all of that, we kick things off with one of our quickfire segments where your favorite magicians tell me the magic they would never leave the house without. This week, award-winning card designer Emily Slights joins me for the Everyday Carry. Emily Slights, thanks so much for joining us here on the Penguin Magic Podcast for the Everyday Carry. Now, even though you are a magician, you are more closely associated with the producing side of playing cards. And so I'm curious, even though I know it's a deck of cards, what pack of cards is your Everyday Carry?
So even though most of the cards I create are more for cardists, card collectors with broken borders, I always carry around cards with a border, which I think is pretty funny. So I'll usually carry around the prototype that I have at that time for my next deck.
Okay.
Because the more that I use it, the more I can make sure that it's as perfect as I want it to be. And then I always carry around Daniel Madison's Gold Revolvers.
Oh, really?
That deck is the first deck I used when I first started Magic, and it's the tuck is all ripped, the cards are all bent, but that's the deck that I used when I first started Two Card Monty.
Yeah.
So I always keep that around kind of as a lucky thing, because that was like the first time I really started Magic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then I'll carry around the last one is my Chapter 1 deck, because it's a pretty minimalistic back design, and my favorite color is blue. So that's why I carry that one around.
Oh, man. Well, those are three fantastic decks, but I want to jump back real quick. I love that you carry around a prototype of whatever you're working on, because as you're shuffling cards or doing a trick here or there for some friends, you must go, oh, like, if I just tweaked this, it would be so much better.
Definitely. So not every deck that I do, I get prototypes. Sometimes I rely mostly on renders. Mm-hmm. But I think prototypes are very important. I encourage everyone to get prototypes, especially if it's your first deck. Mm-hmm. Because you might, digitally, it might look like something's perfect, but when you get it printed out, it might be slightly like off a little bit. So you just want to make sure that everything's as perfect as possible.
Yeah, you know, it's... years ago, before I was a magician, I worked in a plastics manufacturing field, and I had to do a lot of sourcing, and color was always such an issue because we would design in a computer, but when it actually comes to mixing the pigments and having them come through with the plastic, it was always just a little bit different than what you were hoping for.
It's off a little bit, yeah.
And it must be the same with ink and paper, and depending on the stocks and the finishes and the types of inks you're using, you design towards a particular aesthetic, but then when you get that prototype and you're actually working with it, you're like, oh, this red isn't quite right, or this blue isn't as bright as I want it to be.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, I love the fact that you carry around the prototype deck.
It's the first thing I look at in the morning and the last thing at night. I like fixate on each one of my projects because I wanted to be as perfect as possible for the community.
Yeah.
So like, this prototype, it's a dead deck now because I've been using it, but I look at the faces, I look at the back, I look at everything.
Man, I love how much you light up whenever you pick up that prototype deck as we've been chatting, and it's just like, it's so apparent how deeply passionate you are about not just your projects, but playing cards in general. And it's so refreshing. Emily Slights, thanks so much for joining us for the Everyday Carry.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Emily for joining me on the show. If you haven't had a chance to check out her beautiful playing cards, go look for them. You'll find out exactly why they've won so many awards. On to the main event. Michael Kent is a well-known comedy magician who's been crushing the college market for years. During the pandemic, he got deeply involved in not just virtual shows, but streaming, podcasting, and more. I discuss all of that with him in this wide-ranging conversation before we turn our attention to social media, where Michael has some tips that everyone needs to listen to. I caught up with Michael via Zoom, and now you get to join our conversation. Michael Kent, welcome back to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm so excited to have you back on the show. It's been a while since we've had you on, and we got a lot to talk about, but it's great to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, man, it's great to see you, and it has been a while. But
well, I mean, not really a while, because we saw each other this weekend.
We saw each other on Friday, but You know, we had the Magi Fest here in Columbus, but it's been a while since I've been on the podcast. I think last time I did it was in person at P3.
It was in person. You were one of the earliest guests. We talked about mic technique because you have the handheld mic lecture, which is still out there and still rocking.
Yeah, I heard a couple people this weekend came up to me and said that I've completely converted them. I was talking to a couple magicians and they said, I was completely skeptical about using a handheld mic. A lot of magicians think they can't use a handheld mic and are amazed at the freedom that they get when they do switch to a handheld mic.
You know, I hadn't even thought about talking about the handheld mic since we talked about it last time, but just what is the response been? I mean, you just talked a little bit about it, but it seems like the response has been really good in converting magicians over to the handheld mic.
It has been, and it's a tiny fraction of the entire magic population that's going to buy a lecture like that.
Yeah.
Because A, it's going to be someone who is already working, professionally working.
Yeah.
And B, it's a hard ask for some people to switch from what they're used to. And I have had nothing but amazingly positive feedback. I only heard from one out of the hundreds of people that have bought that lecture. I've only heard from one person who said, I liked the lecture. I tried it. I didn't like it. It didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, to that person, I say, give it another shot.
Yeah.
It's it doesn't work for everyone. I will acknowledge that, a handheld mic is just doesn't fit with every performer, but most performers, including and especially comedy magicians.
Yeah.
There are so many advantages to using a handheld that way outweigh the convenience of having both hands free 100% of the time.
I watched the lecture, even though I've been using a handheld mic for years, and it's really interesting when you start to compare stage techniques from magician to magician, especially when it comes to those little technical aspects. Because I find while I prefer to wear a lavalier when I'm performing, I frequently find myself in situations where a handheld mic is the only option. You and I both did, we share an agent and we both did the Music Box Supper Club in Cleveland, not too far apart.
What a cool venue that was.
Very cool. And their lavalier is awful. And so, And so I tried, but it kept feeding back and I couldn't mm-hmm. approach the audience. So we had to switch to the handheld, and having that skill was just while I prefer the lav because it allows me to do some other stuff in my show, knowing that I can approach that stage with confidence is really important.
Yeah. It's a tool. It's a tool in your toolbox that you can, pull out when you need to. And I've heard from a couple people where it's man, you saved my butt because their mic system wasn't working with my lav or with my, countryman. And I've completely got to, have this backup plan. And everywhere you go has a mic stand and a mic almost everywhere you go. And so you're not going to have to fall back behind that. I mean, that's the last stop. And I think the worst situation in terms of convenience is a corded mic, which I'm sure you run into when you do
all the
comedy clubs.
Yeah.
But even that is completely doable if you have simply blocked for it and thought about it ahead of time. Yeah. But we don't have to talk about that.
No.
We could go on.
We're gonna start relitigating the previous time you were on the show.
right.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because you are one of the magicians that I knew that was when the pandemic hit, you pivoted real quick into the virtual show and had a pretty good virtual show too. I was always surprised at whose virtual show came together not only quickly but well, and then because it's a hard thing to pivot into a new medium. I see so many close-up performers starting to get into stand-up now and watching them make all the same mistakes that I did, and your pivot into the virtual world was seemed to be very smooth. Am I correct?
You're incorrect in that it was not smooth. But it was fast. You were correct about that part. And it was, I didn't think of it myself. I had one of my clients, a college, said before anyone had heard the idea of a virtual show, this was before all of the emails were going out hey, I've got a virtual show. There was nothing.
Yeah.
And this client came to me, this was really early in the pandemic, and said, we just got a campus-wide Zoom account. What if you came into our campus and we kept you in one room?
Mm-hmm.
and we broadcast that to the students. And I was like, well, if you're doing that, why don't I do it from home? Why do I have to be there, you know? And she was like, oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
The internet's a thing.
Days, yeah, literally 3 days later, I had converted this space to, I mean, I already had a little studio space set up,
yeah.
But I had, you know, made it to where I could do a virtual show. And I didn't know what I was doing at first. I mean, you know, we did those first ones on Zoom, but I was also doing them on YouTube Live and just interacting with comments. And I found that that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then I found, like everyone did, that this virtual thing is only good if you do this and if you do that. Some of these things, like bring, you know, having someone's face on the screen with you when you're performing is so, was so important for those. And I think we can probably all agree that the best virtual show out there doesn't hold a candle to a mediocre live experience. That's how I feel after having done hundreds of them. Like, I don't think that it was doing anyone a favor in terms of connection. And if anything, now looking back at it, it may have accentuated the separation to do so much virtual programming. And I don't mean just entertainment. I mean also doing meetings and doing, you know, all of the things that we had to do. But it was a traumatic couple years that we dealt with as a nation, or as a world, I guess. So, you know, we did what we could at the time, and I'm glad it's behind me. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving the studio up because this is a really nice spot to shoot promos, to say like, hey, I'm coming, you know, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to come to your school and I'm going to go to your theater or whatever else. Plus, I spent so much time working on the audio in this studio.
Yeah.
That it's a great spot for the podcast.
Yeah. You know, so I want to talk a little bit about the podcast too, because I think that one of the interesting things that came out of this, and I think you're a perfect example of this, but I know that this has happened with a number of performers, is that, you know, we're all a bunch of like type A obsessives who, you know, don't just learn something. I mean, like, I'm even talking to you from my home broadcast studio. While I didn't do as many virtual shows, I got into some of the Twitch streaming stuff, and I just left it all up, and now I use it for the Penguin podcast. But you also ended up with a podcast that's on NPR now.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's on NPR.
Talk a little bit about that.
Has nothing to do with magic other than...
There's lots of magicians on it.
Lots of magicians on. My only requisite for guests is that they have to be like interesting to talk to. If I can hold a conversation with them for half an hour, that's the good part. No, it's a history podcast, essentially. Yeah. It's called The Internet Says It's True. Mm-hmm. And my friend who is a magician, Jonathan Burns, who people have seen on Fool Us and AGT and all that stuff... he came up with that name because I first called it Tell Me What to Google. And the idea was people would tell me something interesting for me to Google. The problem is when you have Google in the title of your product, it's pretty much impossible to be found on Google. The SEO was really bad for that. So I pivoted after the first 25 episodes and I started in 2020, in September of 2020, I started this podcast every week. I basically do a book report on some weird thing that sounds like I made it up, but it's really true from history.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, the episode that came out this morning is about in Philadelphia, there were these weird tiles in the street that started showing up in the asphalt and they're colloquially known as the Toynbee tiles because they talk about this weird sci-fi idea of sending dead people to Jupiter and getting resurrected, but they also rail against the media. And no one knows to this day, it's not 100% confirmed who's been putting them there, but it lasted for decades. It's a crazy mystery. It's a real story. You were on this week's episode.
Yeah, I was.
We play a quiz with someone. So I grab a magician friend or a comedian friend or an actor friend, and I just do like a quick quiz. And this week's episode is 177. So I've done it for 177 consecutive weeks now.
That is wild.
It's nuts. It's nuts. You know, people are listening, so I have to keep doing it.
So I guess the question that I have then is, I don't get to speak to, no. I want to relate this a little bit back to magic for our audience because I'm not saying everyone should go out and start a podcast, but I have to imagine that running 177 episodes has probably changed a little bit about the way you do your show and the way you interact with your audiences. Because I know running this show has definitely changed the way I do a lot of things. Not just the way I talk, but even the way I'm interacting with audiences. Have you found that at all as you've done 177 episodes?
I have just recently realized that I've become, I think, just watching back show footage, I think I'm a better interviewer.
Sorry to interrupt, but this week the show is brought to you by Lightyear from Kyle Purnell. Nick LaCapo joined me via Zoom to discuss this light-based mathematical miracle.
Nick, one of my favorite magicians these days, one of my favorite creators is Kyle Purnell, because he's always coming up with insane, weird ideas that shouldn't work, but absolutely do. And I think one of my favorite creations of his is Lightyear.
This one's wild. I saw him do it on Fool Us. And, you know, when you watch this, there's no way that you could comprehend how such a thing is possible, which is why that show's rigged, because there's no way they didn't know how this, they don't know how this works.
They have no idea how this works.
Are you serious? Yeah. Anyway, I'm on record. It's rigged. Lightyear, in this trick, you write down a two-digit number, okay? And then Kyle shows you these space-age-looking acrylic cards that have holes in them. So when you shine a light, like, through it, it would, like, you know, you would just see all these different dots on the table. They're meaningless. It's got six of them. And it's either six or eight. Is it it's six or
I think
eight?
I think it's eight. It's actually...
I think it's eight. It's eight. It's eight. And then, so basically, he shows you each one and has you look at each one and imagine the number that you're just thinking of as you're looking at them. And he's like showing each one, putting them on the table. And then somehow, through studying the way you analyzed each card, he then tells you what number you're thinking of. Okay. All right. I don't know how that, sure. But then that's not it. He takes out his cell phone flashlight and shines it through the cards. And because of the way that they were stacked up, because of the way that you looked at them, the only number that you can see, the dots now line up to reveal the number that you're just thinking of.
It's one of these effects that he was doing it at, you know, there was a time it seemed like Kyle and I were at every convention together, and he would bust this out and just do it sort of jamming with people. And it freaked people out because no one could conceive of the fact that it was a freely named number. Like, that's the thing, is it's not a force. You can, the number can be literally be almost any number between one and 100.
So you'll get these cards. Yeah. You'll get these special cards that took a lot of time to get made properly. And these cards, if you know the secret way to arrange them, can display any number, which is wild. There is minor limitation, and I mean minor, like very minor. But in general, it's really any two-digit number that can be named by the spectator. Kyle goes over everything that you would need to know presentationally so that you don't end up in a situation with a number that you can't do, because the limitation is so narrow that it really isn't an issue at all.
It's and the cool thing is too, is he's not only has he designed it so that it's easy to do, the system is really simple, but also it's easy to reset. And you can even hand it out to your spectators. He's got a little thing that he teaches you to do that makes it impossible for a lay audience to assemble any numbers. Because I know the thought process is like, oh, well, if you can do it really easily, then they could easily reconstruct any other number they want. But he's got a built-in safety feature to make it impossible for anyone else to do. And it's incredible. I mean, he's done all the work for you.
And then the big thing is, how does he know the number? Which is going to fool you badly when you see it. And you'll learn that as well, which is a really practical way of divining really anything. Yeah. So, this is a great trick.
Lightyear by Kyle Purnell. Check it out.
That's Lightyear by Kyle Purnell, available at penguinmagic.com. As always, the spectacular listeners to our show receive 25% off the featured products a week when they enter a special discount code at checkout. This week, that code is any number. That's any number, all one word, ANYNUMBER, Lanyumber for 25% off Lightyear by Kyle Purnell. That code is only good for Lightyear and only good until the next episode of this show airs. Now, back to my conversation with Michael Kent.
I have just recently realized that I've become, I think, just watching back show footage, I think I'm a better interviewer than I was when I started. I'm a better listener, and I'm willing to give more space, because I remember listening to early episodes of the podcast where I was talking over people because I was so used to running the show. It's a very different skill set to sit and interview someone. And so on stage, instead of, oh, so where are you from? What's your major? What do you do for a living? I'm finding more interesting things to ask them and keying in more on the things that they do say on stage. So, which is an improv skill, you know, I'm just becoming a better listener. That's one thing. But the other thing isn't on stage. The other thing is the work ethic. I have had to, for 177 weeks, essentially do a book report that I some days don't feel like doing. And I know that if I put it off until the weekend, I'm going to have a lot of work to do on the weekend. And I'm sometimes traveling. I gotta, you know, I'm writing episodes on airplanes. I'm recording in hotel rooms, and I hate to do all of that. So it's made me more regimented in my and structured in my work, so that I actually have to put things like write episode on my calendar, so that there's an alert that comes up on my phone that will guilt the heck out of me if I don't do it. And that started with the virtual show because I knew that I had time deadlines, you know.
Yeah.
But I also did a show after the virtual show called Joke Story Trick, which was like a live stream.
Yeah.
It was like a podcast, but I didn't put it on any of the podcast things. I literally only lived on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. And I did it every week, and we had tons of people on the show, tons of people tuned in every week.
It was so much fun.
It was a blast. We wrote jokes every week. Eric Dittleman and I would sit and write goofy headline jokes, like monologue type jokes. And it was so much fun to do. We found some great guests. I had a lot of magicians on. We had people telling stories from their life. And those are all on my Patreon now. You can just go to jokestorytrick.com if you want to see them. There's 65 episodes of that. But what that did was start this thing of every week, I've got a timeline. I've got to get this done. I can't just sit on my hands until the next time I know I have a show.
Yeah.
And then think about what I'm going to do. It got me a little bit thinking ahead.
I think that's like the big takeaway here is that I think so many magicians who are aspiring to become full-time pros sort of think to themselves, I need to work on the show. I need to work on the show. I need to find the next thing. And they sort of tend to ignore all of the other ancillary things they could be doing that make themselves better and more marketable, not just as a performer, but also as a service provider. Or because that's really what we are. I mean, when it comes to, you know, what we're doing with our clients, I know that a lot of times people come to me not because I've got a good show, because I do think I have a good show, but they come because they know that they can ask, hey, we're having issues trying to figure out how to make this talk play to a larger room. Do you have any suggestions? And because of my background in video production and live show production, I can go, oh, you know what you really need to do is you need to get this, and then these are the connections that you need to do, and here's a quick and dirty way for us to get a camera feed to this large projector or television screen.
And absolutely.
And it sounds like that's what you're doing with the podcast.
Yeah, it's just another, like, you know, we talked about like a tool in a toolbox. It's just another tool. And it's not, I think anything that you do in your life, if you're a magician, anything that you do in your life that is not magic benefits your magic.
100%. 100%.
You have to have other interests, because magic is a social art. And if you are not a social person who's connected in the world and has other things that you're interested in, there's never going to be any humanity in your performance. People aren't going to be able to know who you are, because all you are is magic. And that's not to say that you can't share that love and that passion with the audience, but I think that it makes you such a better performer if you have other things that you can talk about. Now, the cool thing about this podcast is, as I'm touring now, you know, the college tour has picked back up. We're doing other shows. I meet people from everywhere. And now, because I've done 177 episodes, and a lot of these are different cities around America, people can tell me where they're from. And if I don't have a story from my podcast about that place, then I have a story from having performed there. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just such a interesting way to interact with people. It's just like having all these little party tricks or something, you know, but I'm really interested in this stuff too. It's like, I love the idea that I'm 45 years old and I can still, I'm still learning things that I've never heard before.
Oh,
that's really freaking cool to me.
Completely. I mean, there's a show that you were on a couple times that I used to host called The Quiz Box, which was a podcast, but also was a live sort of panel style, you know, British-esque trivia show. And there's so much that I learned from writing that stuff that when I'm in conversations with people, especially like at a corporate gig where I, you know, I definitely have nothing in common with these people. It's the ability to sort of look back at something that I've learned from something else that I was involved in and be able to have that conversation that just gets back to, it's another tool in my toolbox for relating to people.
I have this vision. It's not a vision. It's a statement that I've been saying to myself when I feel like I don't have anything in common with an audience, which I sometimes feel the same way when I do like a stiff corporate group.
Yeah.
They scroll through TikTok on the toilet just like we do. We all have this common bond of we're all susceptible to the same content.
Yeah.
It's not the same content because this is a tangent, but it's wild to me that something can be viral with tens of millions of views and no one you know has seen it because it's so deep in an algorithmic compartment, you know, where your algorithm's different than my algorithm.
Yeah.
And so things that are viral aren't viral for everyone anymore.
Yeah.
At least on, you know, social media, this is true. Television is a different animal. But yeah, it's weird to me that like I can't figure out what is ubiquitous. So if I'm writing a joke and I'm asking myself the question, does everyone know about this? It's very hard to answer now. It's when it comes to things that are new, like newest sensation trends and things. I don't know what everyone knows anymore.
I'll give you a tip that I learned in college.
Sure.
So listeners will know that I have a degree in comedy writing and performance from Humber College. And when I was
What was your degree in what college?
Comedy writing and performance from Humber College.
Awesome.
So that'll pay the bills for the week. And when I was in my stand-up class, my professor Larry Horowitz gave us a tip that I still use to this day, which is if I'm going to a city I've never been to, and especially if it's smaller and I don't know anything about it, there's always a local publication with a local reporter. And you call them up and you say, hey, my name is so-and-so. I'm coming to do a performance in the town. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on in the city? Because there's always somebody who has their pulse on their finger on the pulse of what's going on. And it's always the local reporter from whatever the city rag is that like covers it. So just little tip for you guys. That's who to call.
That's a really good tip.
Yeah.
I have like two or three questions when I do college shows that I ask the students when I get there, like as I'm setting up. And some of them are just things like, hey, are there people that regularly come to your shows that have Tourette's or autism where they exclaim?
Yeah.
And I like to know that ahead of time so that I know if someone is exclaiming during the show, like, you know, or yelling and to that it's not them being disruptive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That they're just enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. That's an important distinction because I don't want to call attention to it and embarrass that person.
Yeah.
So that's something I ask. But I also ask, what weird thing is going on in your school that everyone's talking about? What's funny? What is everyone talking about right now?
Yeah.
The frustration I've been having is it usually is met with blank stares because that's a difficult question for them to ask for some reason. So I either need to ask a different person or figure out a different way to phrase that because what I want to know is, you know, anytime you can find that connection, like if there's something that everyone knows is going on campus that, you know, whether they're renovating the dining hall and so the food is horrible right now, you know, that's like, if I make a joke about that, they are putty in my hands, like little things like that. I've learned that every college campus has a problem with either squirrels or Canadian geese. Every campus. And so you can make a joke about that almost everywhere. So sometimes I'll just look at them and go, are you guys squirrels or geese? And, you know, and sometimes it's rabbits. It's whatever. You know, it's there's always something that a town has going on that you can make fun of. But here's an interesting story from yesterday.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. That's right. It's a two-part episode. You'll have to tune back in next week to find out Michael's tips for social media success. As you are listening to this, I am somewhere in Europe enjoying a brief vacation before we get back to the grindstone and I meet you all in Blackpool with some really awesome tricks. Be sure to tune in next week for some exciting updates about this show. The podcast is changing. Don't worry, we're not going away. We're not even going to take a break. I just think we're going to take this in a slightly different direction, and I think you're going to love the direction we're headed. It includes at least 28% more Nick LaCapo. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe, as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media platform that you've been having fun playing electronic mentalism on. If you wanted to reach out to me about anything on this week's show, you'll have to visit me while I'm here in Paris visiting Robert Houdin's museum and artifacts that he left behind. History is so cool. But if you aren't super keen on French magicians who used our art to keep the Indian subcontinent under French rule with a light and heavy chest, you can always reach out to me on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T. From me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios, practice, perform.